This is NPR's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams, with another selection from the NPR 100, our list of the most important American music of the century just passed. In some parts of the country, people know who you mean when you say Frank. And in some parts of the country, they know who you mean when you say Hank.
It's Grand Ole Opry time. Starring tonight, Hank Williams.
Well, I left my home down the road. I told my pa I'm going stepping out and get the honky-tonk blues.
Hank Williams was born in Alabama in 1923, and he died in West Virginia when he was 29 years old. He was found dead in the back seat of his sky blue Cadillac early in the morning of New Year's Day in 1953. He had heart problems brought on by alcoholism and drug addiction. Hank Williams once told Ralph Gleason of the San Francisco Chronicle that a song ain't nothing in the world but a story just wrote with music to it. The events of Hank Williams' death tell the story of his life. And one of his songs, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, is part of that story wrote with music to it. It was recorded in Cincinnati on the afternoon of August 30th, 1949. There's an electric guitar and steel guitar and fiddle. But for 2 minutes and 45 seconds, the song's intensity comes simply from Hank Williams' voice and his words.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I could cry. I've never seen a night so long when time goes crawling by. The moon just went behind the clouds to hide its face and cry.
Hank Williams was 8 years old when his mother gave him a guitar. He learned to play the blues from a black street singer named Rufus Payne. He started a band, went on the radio stations, played the bars and the county fairs, and made it to the Grand Ole Opry in 1949, arriving as a star with the song Lovesick Blues. The other classics came soon, I Can't Help It If I'm Still in Love with You, Hey Good Lookin', You Win Again, Your Cheatin' Heart, Jambalaya. People say it was a thrill to see him on stage. One promoter said he had the black, piercing eyes, and he'd pick somebody out in the audience. He was the first man to move. He'd move sexually, and the women would love him.
The chauffeurs told me that they pulled in to the Skyline Drive-In, which is about 2 miles from here, to get out and stretch your legs and all, and that's when they discovered that Hank was dead.
Joe Tyree of Tyree Funeral Home in the town of Oak Hill, West Virginia. He took care of Hank Williams' body that day in 1953.
They came into the service station, asked where the hospital was at, and they said around to the corner, and they just came around and went up to the hospital.
Was it that New Year's Day a big event in your life, in your career?
Not really, and because, you know, when we got the call that said Hank Williams, that didn't mean anything to me because we had a lot of Williamses in this area here, and I thought maybe it might have been one of our local citizens until we got up to the hospital and they said he was a radio singer, and I still didn't pay a lot of attention to that until the telephones started ringing at all.
The news that Hank Williams had died was tragic, but not surprising. He had been fired from the Grand Ole Opry. They couldn't count on him to show up. He went back to playing high school gyms and honky-tonks. Sometimes on stage he'd be drunk and belligerent. It was said that he was always in pain from his back. He had a spinal disorder that was getting worse, despite surgery. With alcohol, he mixed pills, stimulants, and sedatives. He was taking chloral hydrate and shots of Demerol. In Oak Hill, on the front lawn of the library downtown, there's a small stone monument with a plaque telling the story of Hank Williams' death. Jack Pennington is among the local people who wanted to mark this spot.
Hank lived a lifetime in them 29 years, and he's still living. He's still living. They only buried the shell of Hank in that grave in Montgomery, Alabama. Hank's still living. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, now, I don't see him like in Kroger's or at the, Walmart's or places like this, but he lives in the hearts of these fans, and there's a lot of fans, not just in the United States, not just around here, but all over.
The Skyline Drive-In still stands south of Oak Hill, a tan cinder block drive-in restaurant. A sign says, blink lights for service. You can stop for a coal miner's pizza and read the faded Hank Williams front page stories on the wall. Walter Fitzpatrick is sitting on the first stool inside the door. He's a retired truck driver. He was 12 years old when Williams died.
Well, I loved the man, but never did see him. You know what I'm talking about? I always loved his music. He was country. I guess, everything that he sung. And I had a book about it. You know, about all his songs. When I lost my home in 79, I guess I lost about $7,000 to $8,000 of records and music that I ordered from Uncle Jim's record shop down south, you know. And it took me some years to get some of it back.
How do you compare the country singers today to Hank Williams?
It's racket. See what they got in Nashville now they call singers?
But when you listen to them, you can hear a little bit of Hank Williams in all of them.
Well, but there's a lot of difference. It just ain't got there. Otherwise, you was raised up on beans, and when it gets back down to the gravy bowl, it's a little bit different.
We have come to the Skyline Drive-In Restaurant to talk with music historian John Lilly. He has brought his guitar and his Hank Williams stories.
I think artistically, he set the style, especially for that edge of country music that borders on rock, even though people rightfully so see Hank as the epitome of country music in its purest form. If you listen carefully and look carefully at the way those songs are constructed, there's plenty of blues influence. There's plenty of the electric guitar laying down that heavy bass line. And he was, you know, at that edge, you know, pushing country music into popular forms, but keeping it true to its roots. And I think that is when country music is at its most successful. He was not retro. He was taking those traditions and merging it with the contemporary music of the time.
When you talk about I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, you talk about it as if it's true. Right?
Oh, yeah. There you get it right there. Is it just a song, or is he really revealing something, you know, very personal and private? And I believe in his case it was both. The way I've always heard the song, it's the verse that goes, "Did you ever see a robin weep when leaves began to die?" Well, the way that next line has been sung by almost every other singer, and the way it appears in the sheet music, is that means he's lost the will to live. I'm so lonesome I could cry. But I swear he sings, like me, he's lost the will to live. I'm so lonesome I could cry. And that incredibly mournful thought, I think, was a stark admission of where he saw his life going and what his true thoughts were. It was recorded at the time of his greatest commercial success. In 1949, he was the biggest star in the country. Yet, in the next 2 years, he slid to the point where we are here at Oak Hill. His life came to an end.
John Lilly, music historian, editor of Golden Seal magazine, talking with us at a back booth at the Skyline Drive-In outside Oak Hill, West Virginia.
Did you ever see a robin weep when leaves began to die? Like me, he's lost the will to live. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
Hank Williams died January 1, 1953. In Billboard magazine late that February, four of the top seven country hits were by Hank Williams, including the song, "I'll Never Get Out of This World Alive."